This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Upgrade your business with Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. Shop Pay boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning fewer carts going abandoned and more sales going cha-ching. So if you're into growing your business, get a commerce platform that's ready to sell wherever your customers are. Visit Shopify.com to upgrade your selling today.
News radio studios in Midtown Manhattan. It's the fastest growing radio talk show. Brian Kilmeade.
Appreciate you all being with us. We're back in action today in the Brian Kilmeade Show. Rich Lowry is going to join me at the bottom of the hour. Callie Means is queuing up right now, co-author of Good Energy, the co-founder of TrueMed, and a company that enables Americans to purchase healthy food and exercise tax-free. She made a huge impact on Americans' diets already. Working with RFK Jr. For HHS, the word is he has gotten through committee, and it looks like he's going to sail through as soon as they can get him a vote. RFK has defied the odds and will be HHS secretary. It's all but a done deal should something else not come out. Tulsi Gabbard, the same thing. We'll talk to her about that, but first let's get to the big three.
Number three.
Vaccines save lives. Mr. Kennedy has asked for my input into hiring decisions at HHS. These commitments and my expectation that we can have a great working relationship to make America healthy again
is the basis
of my support.
Senator Dr. Cassidy was the key vote, and he has come aboard the RFK train. We are going to start really looking at what we're eating, what we're taking, and why there's so many chronic diseases in America. I feel like we're on the way. We'll talk to Callie about that.
Number two.
I think the potential in the Gaza Strip is unbelievable. They've tried the other, and they've tried it for decades and decades and decades. It's not going to work. We have an opportunity to do something that could be phenomenal.
And that's why he's doing something totally different, blowing their minds. President Trump offers a solution for Gaza, and almost all caught by surprise as he makes clear Israel never had a better friend in the White House and Iran a more dead serious enemy.
Number one.
We have to fight this in the courts. We have to fight this in the Congress. We have to fight this in the streets.
We have got to tell Elon Musk nobody elected you.
Are you ready to stand up and defend our democracy?
It's unbelievable, right? I mean, that's what Democrats are doing because Elon Musk is offering cuts. Cuts as they go from no one had gone before in our budget. That's what he's supposed to be doing, correct? That's what Doge is doing, right? Shaving off $1 billion a day, not Republican or Democratic dollars. American responsibility. That's what it is. USAID, CIA, FBI, education are put on notice. Every dime, every agent will be examined. Predictably, the Democrats' collective heads seem to be exploding. Let's bring in Callie Means, co-author of Good Energy. Callie, welcome back.
Oh, thanks, Brian. It's a great day. As you said, it's looking good for RFK.
And here's what Bill Cassidy said. As you know, he's a Republican who voted to impeach Trump, and many people thought, uh-oh, he's going to get Trump back. He's going to vote against him, not get him out of committee. Cut 37.
The science is credible. Vaccines save lives. They are safe. They do not cause autism. Mr. Kennedy has asked for my input into hiring decisions at HHS beyond Senate-confirmed positions. He committed that the HELP committee chair, whether it's me or someone else, may choose a representative on any board or commission formed to review vaccine safety. These commitments and my expectation that we can have a great working relationship to make America healthy again is the basis of my support.
You okay with that, Callie?
Yeah, Brian, I think Senator Cassidy coming on board and RFK appearing to be, as you said, sailing through confirmation, I think this is the biggest cabinet pick of our lives. I mean, I think more people have been paying attention to this, and I think this is just a massive win for President Trump of really the grassroots going up against the most powerful industry in the country. On Senator Cassidy specifically, I think you saw in the hearings, they were a bit speaking past each other. Senator Cassidy has been making Medicare, Medicaid policy, has been deep into public health policy for decades. And Bobby Kennedy isn't in the weeds on Medicare policy. What the Make America Healthy Again movement, what he's been talking about is it's much larger than the nuances of our Medicare Part D, page 300. The problem is, and the reason costs are going up and the reason human capital in America is going down is because we're getting sick. And the reason we're getting sick isn't the policy intricacies. It's the fact that we're subsidizing ultra-processed food for our kids, 60-70% of SNAP is ultra-processed food, 18% is soda, food stamps. And then the system just fundamentally, every gear of the system profits when somebody gets sick and stays sick with chronic disease. And that's 95% of medical spending is managing chronic disease. So Bobby talked about that higher level. And I think what happened in the conversation between Cassie and Bobby is they actually realized they have a shared goal, which is health, trust in public health. And the trust in public health has not declined because of Bobby Kennedy. It's declined because of the public health authorities. So, yeah, I think it's totally fine that they're going to work together. I think they both genuinely want the same thing. And are actually come at it from different levels. And I think they'll have a great working relationship.
Here's what he said. I thought this was one of his finest moments on why he wants this job. Now, think about it. His family has abandoned him. Caroline Kennedy saying the most horrific things possible about anybody, let alone somebody who's your cousin. But this is why he did it. Cut 39.
The first thing I've done every morning for the past 20 years is to get on my knees and pray to God that he would put me in a position to end the chronic disease epidemic. I know how to fix it, and there's nobody who will fix it the way that I do because I'm not scared of vested interests. I don't care. I'm not here because I want a position or a job. I have a very good life and a happy family.
So I think that resonated. And what about you?
I think it resonated because it's true. I think where the Democrats, and let's be clear, I think the Democrats really disgrace themselves in this hearing. I think one of the worst parts is when Ron Wyden and Elizabeth Warren, they didn't just talk about the policy differences. They actually questioned his motivations. They actually said, you want kids to be sick. And I think any American watching knows that Bobby Kennedy is in this for the right reasons. Whether you agree or disagree with the nuances of what he's saying, this man has given up everything. He's put it all on the line. You know, and really marshaling Americans' conscience towards this idea of why the heck are we getting so sick? Why are 38% of American teens pre-diabetic? Why are 50% of teens overweight or obese? And it's like 3% in Japan. I can tell you from being close to him over the past 6 months and watching really the emotional conversations between him and Trump lead to the endorsement, this is not about politics. You know, what the Republicans are saying about healthy food and health, this is stuff liberals would have been saying 10 years ago. This is totally nonpartisan. This is a real legacy item that President Trump thinks he can achieve of just really getting back to science on why we're getting sick, reestablishing our medical guidelines. Right now, the American Medical Association recommends Ozempic for 12-year-olds. It recommends a statin once a 6-year-old has high cholesterol. It recommends an SSRI when a 12-year-old is a little bit sad. You know, we need to get back those codes. Those codes also say 2-year-olds can have gender transition surgery. The U.S. government codes say that, which we outsource to the American Medical Association. So that's what Bobby's passionate about. I always go, Brian, the Democrats said the word measles 25 times in the first hearing. They said the word chronic disease, diabetes, obesity 0 times. 300 people a year died of measles before the invention of the vaccine. It's a problem, but that's just not what Bobby's focused on. He's focused on these big issues, and I think that came through.
Absolutely. So the question is how to do it. How do you work inside that mammoth organization to question everything and make people sure. prove that these things are right? And, for example, when I was talking to a member of his staff yesterday that was trying to get him elected as independent, he said he was a journalist. And he was saying that instead of just saying a study said this, I asked myself, who did the study? When's the last time this study was done? How big was the focus group? How big was the test group? And a lot of the answers were insufficient. It's you never question the study. You deal with its conclusions. You never go back and say, how did they get those conclusions? That's what I think he's going to do. And he'll be smart to call 100%. Up Cassidy and say, doctor, senator, this is what I found. Before you hear it in the Washington Post, this is what I found. This has to disturb you. Do you think he's going to find that? There's a lot of things that we've wrongly concluded by studies we didn't commission?
Brian, 50% of FDA studies that underlie our drug approval processes can't be replicated. I actually am totally fine with what Senator Cassidy said because Bobby's not going in there with opinions. It does not matter what Bobby's opinions are, and he said this. He's going in to get money to the best scientists. So I actually think it's very simple. The principles of MAHA are that the American people want to be healthy. The incentives are in the way, so let's fix the incentives. and this idea of informed consent and patient choice. So let's just go real quick what Bobby can do in the next year and go by the agency. So the NIH right now, 85% of the research is pharmaceutical R&D. It's a revolving door for the pharmaceutical industry. He's going to work with Jay Bhattacharya and fulfill President Trump's mandate to get back to foundational science. And I truly mean this, Brian. The people on the left won't believe this. But when Bobby and Kennedy and President Trump talk about the NIH, they have zero ideology. They literally just want to get money back to scientists right now. So that's a big actually win for the NIH, because that science then underlies our standard of care. As I said, right now, heart disease is seen as a statin deficiency. Obesity is seen as an Ozempic deficiency. There's been zero research on why we're getting Alzheimer's. There's billions of dollars of research on Band-Aids for Alzheimer's, which are ineffective. So the NIH is very important. The FDA right now, 75% of it's funded by pharma for drug approvals. We simply need to deregulate and have better incentives that we're going to get approvals to the best and most innovative therapeutics to prevent and reverse disease. Right now, 90% of the drugs coming out of the FDA are for management of disease, not curing management, which is profitable for the industry. It costs $3 billion to get a drug through, which is a big pharma ploy to basically only have non-innovative management techniques come through. And the last, Brian, is the CMS. What the research and the FDA approval processes do is they get to the big kahuna, which is our CMS codes. These underlie 20% of the U.S. economy in every single medical decision we make. And when you have better research and have a better FDA, you can actually have CMS codes that prevent and reverse disease. I mean, why for obesity aren't we working on, you know, better food for our kids? That could be a medical code. Why when somebody's depressed do we drug them right away and not have more personalized therapeutics? Why aren't we doing more personalized blood testing to figure out nutrient deficiencies? These could all be incentivized by our system. So taking on the American Medical Association, right, which makes those codes – that's the framework, and I think we can get these things done quickly, Brian.
Callie Means, by the way, you don't have any issue that resonates with more people than the ones you and your sister brought up in your book, is that I have more people talking about those interviews I do with you than any other interview, including Breaking News. But are you thinking about joining him? Would there be something in there for you?
Well, I've been working every day to make sure we get the great appointments in and do whatever I can to help Bobby. Casey and I are right now planning to stay on, help however we can from the outside. And I think we have an incredible team with Marty McCary, Jay Bhattacharya, Mehmet Oz, that we're going to do whatever we possibly can to help from the outside, Brian.
Okay. A couple of things. There's another issue, and that's this whole trans issue and puberty blockers and gender dysphoria. In New York City, not only are they not on board with what Trump's talking about, they're protesting that he's even saying that you should wait till you're 18 to change your gender. Listen to Cynthia Nixon. She actually ran for mayor. Cut 48.
I am here today as the mother of a proud trans man. I am here today as the aunt of a proud trans man. My best friend's kid is trans, and my kid's best friend is trans.
Congratulations. Is anyone sticking to their same gender at all in her life? I've never seen a roster like that. But she's saying she's protesting the fact that teens will not be able to get their gender switched. Where does that fall in as things to do list? Because that's going to go to HHS, too.
Oh, Brian, it's top of the list. As I said, the American Medical Association, which we outsource our codes to, they actually say two-year-olds. They don't actually have a limitation on gender transition surgery age, not just gender-affirming care. This is evil, and I think the gender transition and gender-affirming care is actually a great example of what Bobby's been talking about, which is the total corporate capture and moral depravity of our healthcare incentives. You have to understand, the pharmaceutical companies are the largest funders right now of civil rights groups and LGBT groups, like the Human Rights Campaign. They're funded dark money by the pharma industry to berate anyone as a bigot for questioning whether a child should be getting gender affirming care, because there's millions and millions of dollars to be made, billions of dollars to be made from these surgeries. So you have Europe and very progressive countries outright banning these barbaric surgeries. And you still, in our system, where the pharmaceutical industry is the biggest funder of politicians, the biggest funder of regulatory agencies, the biggest funder of many of our information sources, they've been able to create this narrative where you're a bigot for opposing this. I mean, thank God for President Trump. I mean, already the HHS website, the word birthing person has been changed back to mother. Yes, they took the word mother off some parts of government websites. Harvard Medical School still doesn't allow people to use the word mother. I mean, this is a spiritual, dark issue. I think, Brian, if you really sum up what Bobby Kennedy and what President Trump said, if you sum up why, you know, frankly, our interviews have been so impactful, why this issue has been so impactful, it's because of this message of stay the heck away from kids. I actually think it's a unifying theory of President Trump,
right?
And really what Bobby Kennedy's talking about. So this is a great example of it.
It's just so weird to say to someone, I think girls should play against girls and trans athletes. It's not fair. It's dangerous. Why that's even a debate, but it is. And it really worked for this election because common sense played a role. Callie, that's what you have. I don't see a conservative or a liberal. I just see somebody who sees a huge problem in America that's correctable, and maybe we're on our way to doing that. I'll believe it when the whole Senate votes, but it's going to happen. Yeah. He's going to get through. Callie Means, thanks so much.
Thank you, Brian.
You got it. And also pick up his book, Good Energy. Your turn when we come back. 1-866-408-7669. We're following all the breaking news as well as the news that was made late last night. Don't move.
Increasing your intelligence quotient.
What the hell did you just say?
It's Brian Kilmeade.
This episode is brought to you by MeUndies. While MeUndies can't totally help your love life this Valentine's Day, they can offer you insanely comfy undies and loungewear to buy or gift. MeUndies has so many awesome Valentine's Day prints and styles. Plus, you can match with your partner, friends, or even your pets. This Valentine's Day, give the gift that'll keep them thinking of you. And score huge site-wide savings at MeUndies.com/Spotify. That's MeUndies.com/Spotify. MeUndies. Comfort from the outside in.
The more you listen, the more you'll know. It's Brian Kilmeade.
In the last 10 days, Donald Trump has done more to destabilize things across the planet than perhaps any other president in recent memory.
It's not only a gift to our adversaries, but trying to shut down the Agency for International Development by executive order is plain illegal.
We don't have a fourth branch of government called Elon Musk, and that's going to become real clear.
This is a constitutional crisis that we are in today. Let's call it what it is.
We talked about Trump wanting to be a dictator on day one, and here we are. This is what the beginning of dictatorship looks like.
They looked at USAID, and one of the things that Musk is looking at with his DOGE program, government efficiency, was USAID. And why is it going to parades for gays in Ireland? Why are they putting money into ridiculous programs on Bernie garbage in Vietnam? Why are they doing the same thing with Ecuador and LGBTQ rights over in El Salvador and through Central and South America? And when asked and questioned about it, Joni Ernst came out and said, as a sitting senator, they were trying to intimidate her to stop asking questions. So when Trump takes over, you got to be kidding me. I'm not going to deal with this. Here's what AIDS funded. $1.5 million to advance DEI in Serbia. $70,000 for DEI musical in Ireland. $47,000 for a trans opera in Colombia. $32,000 for a trans comic book in Peru. Do you feel good about your money going there? $377,000 went to Democrats in their donations. $12,000 went to Republicans. That according to OpenSecrets.com. USAID funding, Harris first Trump, Vice President Harris, $241,000 to VP Harris, Trump, $900. Okay? USAID statement, they're trying to hold on. They've been locked out of their computers. They would not be cooperative, so now they're done. They're going to be folded into the State Department so their good works get done. Medicines to developing countries, think to that nature that gives us, that helps people out and gives us political sway there. But doing this other crap for somebody else's agenda is over. Go ahead, protest. You want to be able to have a 15-year-old to change genders. That's where your line in the sand is? Pick a different president.
If you're interested in it, Brian's talking about it. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
I'm a little worried, particularly with this USAID stuff. Mm-hmm. My foundation partners with USAID on nutrition and getting vaccines out. And, you know, there's incredible people. Hopefully we'll get some of that work back in shape. In fact, if we don't, you know, you could have literally millions of deaths.
So Bill Gates on The View, he knows everything. He says that USAID's got to get back up and running. They do a lot of good work, and I think they do. But what happened is they have to be reined in. They got to be part of the State Department. That's the way it is. And then these programs funding these cultural issues are not something the American people are for. What is so hard to understand about that? You think I'm wrong? Go ahead. Call me. 1-866-408-7669. Rich Lowry joins me now, editor of National Review. You know, Rich, I know you talked about Panama, and I want to get into that and what the president's doing, what the Secretary of State's doing in El Salvador, and he's handling all the things that President Trump talked about before he got confirmed. And once he got confirmed, Rubio's is doing this in full stride. But for the longest time, Republicans have talked about ending these the funding of these cultural issues. Why do you think Trump is so – how has Trump been able to tackle this, what other Republican presidents haven't?
It's just a rush to do stuff and break things and move on. I was talking with a friend about this yesterday. You know, it centered lore that Reagan fired the air traffic controllers, and this was a huge change and a big move and signal to the Soviets how tough he was, and he wouldn't back down. That's like what Elon Musk does in a day.
Yeah.
It's extraordinary. So it's the kind of things, you know, we've talked about forever and haven't happened, and he has this disruptor actually doing them. So I agree, USAID, they're important aspects of it, but it became a vehicle for progressivism that made it seem as though the mission of America was to spread fundamentally American ideas that were woke ideology, right? That was wrong. It needed to stop. And, you know, Republicans have tried to change Washington for years and years and years and years, and the minimalist approach hasn't worked, so now we're trying blunt force trauma. And, you know, and there'll be downsides to that, but it's likely that there are going to be more results at the end of the day than prior, more cautious approaches.
Senator Joni Ernst accused USAID of intimidating and threatening her in her effort to obstruct congressional oversight. She said, "I got a problem with what you're spending it on." The senator said the agency stonewalled her last year when she tried to investigate the agency's cash flow. They said, "No, you cannot look at it. You're not going to look at our contracts. You don't need access to it, so we're not going to let you see it." USAID staff even threatened to bring legal action against the senator. She said, "I mean, it is crazy." So here this veteran, this sitting senator can't get to look at the books of an aid agency. And now you know where they're cut. Now you know where that arrogance comes from.
Yeah, this is like the federal bureaucracy achieving its own consciousness, like the way you worry about a robot will or AI will. Bureaucracy is a creature of the legislature that creates it and approves the funding, and then the executive runs it. All these people, they work for the executive branch. They don't have any shouldn't have any ability to fight back from what the democratically elected political leaders want to do. But this is the way it's operated for decades, and it has to change.
Yeah, it's just interesting. So now Trump said this about what's going to happen to USAID. Cut six.
And it sounds like you're going to wind down USAID.
It sounds like it. I mean, I think so. Yeah.
So when that happens, which part of the government?
Well, I can see Marco Rubio being in charge, State Department, because they're giving money to. I mean, some of the money is well spent, I guess, but much of it is really fraudulent.
So this is what's going to happen in real time, and people are flipping out. You know, we get a lot of people saying, "Well, people will die, medicines won't be handed out." So maybe there's a way to keep some systems going, but the other stuff, and I ran it through the last hour, it is so embarrassing that this is happening. And if they were that proud of it, they would have told us. As I mentioned, 1.5 million to advance DEI in Serbia, 32,000 for trans comic book in Peru, 47,000 for trans opera in Colombia. This is so it goes on and on and on. And when she says, "Let me see your books," they say no. And then they say they're not going to cooperate. So he basically said, "You're locked out of your computer. Don't go to work."
Yeah. So I'm not a lawyer and haven't looked at this carefully. I think having Marco run it is not a legal problem. I think if you actually just shut it down without Congress have anything to say about it, that would be a problem. It was created originally by executive order, so you should be able to undo executive actions on your own as an executive, but then Congress over time has blessed its existence. But just bringing it to heel, running through what it's doing and Xing out the stuff that makes zero sense and either just saving that money or repurposing it to things that are really worthwhile, that's what needs to happen.
So I want to bring it to something else that you wrote about. So Marco Rubio, you know, we want Greenland, and at first there was pushback, but now Denmark has agreed to allow us to expand our military presence and expand. They're going to expand their own presence in Greenland. And then you mentioned in a column that Trump sent Rubio down to Panama, and he had a big success. Here's what Trump says he wants from Panama.
We gave it away essentially for nothing, and we either want it back or we're going to get something very strong or we're going to take it back. And China will be dealt with. And we didn't give that to China. We gave it to Panama. We shouldn't have given it to Panama. But Panama, as you know, has violated the agreement, totally violated the agreement. So that's in the process right now. But they did have a very good meeting with the head of Panama.
And what changed after that meeting, Rich Lowry?
Well, so the president of Panama, who, by the way, seems to be a good guy, campaigned on closing the Darien Gap. He's pro-American, said, look, we're no longer going to be part of the Belt and Road Initiative. Of course, this is a Chinese influence operation around the world where they pay people off to give them access to ports and whatnot and infrastructure projects. Panama was the first Latin American country to enter into the Belt and Road, and now it says, you know what, we're going to be the first to leave the Belt and Road. So that in itself is significant. Then it says it's going to look at the concessions that this Hong Kong company has to run ports on either side of the canal. Now, 20 years ago or whenever this came about, Hong Kong was still independent. It's not anymore, so a Hong Kong company is basically a Chinese company, so that has a whole different coloration. They're going to look at that. And then they said, reportedly, I haven't seen this, I'm not sure this is totally nailed down, but they're going to let our naval ships go through without transit fees. And I think we're coming back for more for them. So retaking it, I don't know about that, but whenever Trump says that, the president of Panama's ears perk up, obviously. And Trump said either retake it or get something very strong. I don't know what very strong means, but that's what I think. That scenario is the one I think is likely.
But whatever it means, when Jimmy Carter gave it for a dollar, there were protests at the canal almost daily. Our military had to go down there because they wanted it back. They wanted to own it. And we said it would have been cost so much with security to keep it. We said, okay, do it, but you got to promise you're not going to give it to a third entity. And they did. So they're running it on both ends. So it's a little bit our fault. We always ignore Central and South America. And China said, that's fine with me. I'm going to have a huge influence in Brazil. Russia said, that's fine with me. Iran says, that's fine with me. We're going to help with that brutal dictator in Venezuela. And they don't care about human rights. They just care about the natural resources of the area. And then they get a presence and foothold in our hemisphere. So this is Trump reasserting it without making a big speech saying Monroe Doctrine is back.
Yeah. So it seems to me there could have been something. There's a lot of discontent in Panama when they didn't control this huge swath of their own territory and this huge symbol around the world of an engineering marvel. It seems to me you could have cut some sort of deal short of just giving it back to them.
Sure.
But we did it, and you're right, we've ignored our own hemisphere, our adversaries haven't, and this is something that a huge priority of Marco Rubio's, obviously, right? Where's his first foreign trip? Down to these places. And at the moment, he has the easiest job in the world because he just says, oh, by the way, I'm from President Trump's my boss, and those places, like, okay, what do you want? You know, he had a great trip in El Salvador, too.
I know that Henry Kissinger talked about how they thought Nixon was a little crazy and it really helped him. So I think it's the same situation with Trump. But now you don't need a class on who he is. We all saw who Donald Trump is around the world. So I want to talk about what's going on with Elon Musk and Doge. So Musk has told friends he's considered the ultimate metric for his success to be the number of dollars saved per day. Right now it's at $1 billion. He's going in. The federal deficit annually is $1.8 trillion over. Obviously, you got to go in and make some big changes. When he's talking about waste, fraud, and abuse, they say minimum $240 billion right away that they could cut. It's just a portion of the deficit, but it's chipping away. getting us in that mindset of being federally responsible. So now he's got his guys like Tesla, Tom Shedd from Tesla. He's been tapped to lead a technological team on GSA. He told staffers that he hoped to put all federal contracts into a centralized system so they could be analyzed by AI. These are three people familiar with the meeting. So far, the team has claimed to have saved the federal government $1 billion a day, and contracts related to diversity, equity, and inclusion have been eliminated. That is saving money. Why is this controversial?
Well, there are going to be legal questions about, you know, what contract can you change and what can you defund. So all that will be litigated. But in my mind, it's all fantastic. And look, he's not going to balance the budget. He has this little bit of a mindset. You know, you save whatever that number that he says you do every day, and you add that up, and voila, you're balanced your books. That's how a private company works. You know, he's going to run against a hard, even to get all that $240 billion that's wasted. That'd be fantastic. But you're not balancing the budget, and you can't balance the budget without going after entitlements, which isn't just a waste and efficiency issue. It's a major political issue. But that doesn't mean that we shouldn't be doing everything we can. And I think there'll be meaningful changes. Some of it will be reversed under lawsuits, but there'll be meaningful changes 5 years ago. 5 years from now, I'll be able to point back and say, these are things that Doge did. And, you know, it's great. Like, these four kids that have gotten a lot of attention, they look like something out of the Big Bang Theory. You know, the guys who are sleeping on the cots, they're probably the single most effective federal workers at the moment because they're geniuses. They're not set in their ways. They're not just working at 9 to 5 and making sure they take their hour lunch break. And they don't have any of the conventional assumptions that have kind of ossified the federal government.
And also, as Musk wrote over the weekend, I work weekends. He goes, that's my superpower.
Yeah.
And I could have went to a lot of great parties, but I'm sitting in the Eisenhower building and I'm trying to do this for the country. He's not saving SpaceX.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So if he's even marginally successful at this, to add up what he's done with SpaceX, what he's done with Skynet, with the drilling, with the Neuralink he's working on, and to transform how the federal government works, that's pretty good for he could retire after that. Of course, he won't.
Real quick, nominations. It looks like Howard Lutnick's nomination for Commerce will get marked up. Kelly Loeffler is going to be a layup, but it's still taking some time. I think it's sinful. Pam Bondi got through 54-46, and now RFK and Tulsi got out of committee. Are you surprised?
I thought after Tulsi's hearing, it was like a 50-50 proposition. I kind of thought for a minute there she was going to go down, and I quickly realized, no, each member of this committee is going to be pressured in a way that's going to make it really hard for them to vote against her. Tom Cotton, highly effective, obviously, guy. So is J.D. Vance. So they worked it. They got her through. She's going to pass on the floor as well, and so will RFK. So it's a clean sweep except for Gates, and that was the model of someone. If you're going to take someone down, you need to do it before anyone's name or fingerprints was on it, right? If you just had six or eight anonymous Republican senators say we can't do this, that was a way to oppose these nominees. But once you had to stick your head up and put your name on it, that's real uncomfortable.
Here is Donald Trump on how to solve the Gaza issue. Cut 19.
The only reason the Palestinians want to go back to Gaza is they have no alternative. It's right now a demolition site. This is just a demolition site. Virtually every building is down. They're living under fallen concrete that's very dangerous and very precarious. They instead can occupy all of a beautiful area with homes and safety, and they can live out their lives in peace and harmony instead of having to go back and do it again.
So he's saying, we'll take Gaza. They can leave and go somewhere else and decide if they want to go back. What do you think?
Yeah. Well, on paper, you know, yeah. But in reality, no. You know, they're not going to want to leave because they do consider it their home. Two, no one's going to want to take them. And we wouldn't want, like, Jordan to take them. Jordan's a relatively small country, already has a problem with its radicalized Palestinian population, doesn't want more. Egypt's bigger and maybe could absorb it, but they're not going to want to do it. But, you know, in theory and on paper, sending them to Qatar, you know, using the World Cup housing to house them and rebuilding Gaza into something different. Yeah, but the real people involved and real politics involved, so I don't think so.
I just think it gets people thinking out of the box. It gets people reconfiguring.
True.
All those think tanks and specialists, I have great respect for people like that. But when someone comes, when something happens unorthodox, don't get angry.
Yeah,
everyone gets so angry. I'm like, what is going on?
You know, the Abraham Accords, outside the box.
Yeah.
Operation Warp Speed, outside the box. Remain in Mexico and all that stuff that came up at the end of the first term, outside the box. So I agree with you. You know, let's think about it, debate it, but this one seems very unlikely to me.
Rich Lowry, it's a fun time, right? It's a fun time to be the editor of National
Review.
Every
single day. Every single day.
Back in a moment.
It's Brian Kilmeade. Radio that makes you think. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Denmark, Panama, and Canada used to fight the Nazis. Now we're scouring the globe for easy marks. What do we left? The Jake Paul of nations? I know. Is that what we're doing? I know China's out there, but Panama's a legitimate fight.
So funny. That is pretty funny, right? So, I mean, there's nothing wrong. That's called humor. That is nothing. Johnny Carson, I could see doing that too. But what you do is you turn around, and he also mocked Chuck Schumer. And we also have that from a couple of days ago on Monday night. He only works Monday night. But I think he's 100% right. I think that Bill Maher found it, obviously, 2 years ago. And even though he's always going to vote Democrat, he's always going to be a liberal. But I think in terms of the lunacy and the lack of practicality and common sense among the left, I think John Stewart gets it. Roy, listen on WVGA. Hey, Roy.
Morning, Brian. How are you?
Great.
That's a good show. Listen, I think Trump needs to take a play out of Admiral Farragut's playbook. In the Battle of Mobile Bay, all of his ships were being sunk. His commanders were getting afraid to go forward. Farragut was up to his neck in defeat, but he went and said, damn the torpedoes, full speed ahead. And that's what Trump needs to do. Put his foot on the gas pedal and set the speed control.
I think he is, Roy. I think he's taking your advice. I don't think he's even considering slowing down. But part of his strategy is go really hard, knowing he's going to pull back. For example, with China, he said 10% tariffs. They retaliated, kept his mouth shut. He goes, you know what? I was supposed to talk to President Xi. I'm in no rush. Part of a strategy. Doesn't mean he's backing off. Brandon in Los Angeles. Hey, Brandon.
Hi, Brian. So I know you've been an avid and ardent Ukraine supporter all along. But on the other hand, based on two revelations, first, Zelensky admitting that he doesn't know what to do, what happened to the $100 billion that went missing that we have provided out of the $177 billion. And he ties in with also with the recent revelations about USAID. So would you reassess your position regarding Ukraine?
No, number one, I got to find out about the $100 billion. Number one, it doesn't mean he can't find it. He says he doesn't know where it is. Means he doesn't mean it's not on the front lines. Number two is he's gotten rid of a lot of people. I mean, there was corruption issues in Ukraine. It didn't end overnight.
From high atop Fox News headquarters in New York City, always seeking solutions, never sowing division. It's Brian Kilmeade.
All right, from 40th and 6th in Midtown Manhattan, heard around the country, around the world, this is the Brian Kilmeade Show. Yesterday, I was in Austin, Texas. I was doing a fantastic feature you're going to love. University of Austin, Texas, UATX. And their group, their college that was formed, not accredited yet because they can't. They need 4 years to actually graduate somebody. And Barry White started it. Harlan Crow is one of the investors. Joe Lonsdale, who's been a tech superstar, been on our show multiple times. We have Neil Ferguson, and Hoover Institute, Democrats, Republicans, liberals, conservatives. They wanted to get all this craziness into colleges, off the college campuses. When it didn't work, they started their own. And it's so impressive. 92 kids in their first class. I was able to see them. They just on one floor right now. Within 5 years, they're going to have their own sprawling campus right in a bustling Austin. So I'm going to have that feature on One Nation, which airs Saturday night at 9 o'clock. This hour, I'm going to join by the best offensive lineman in the history of football, Anthony Munoz. He's going to talk about the Super Bowl and some other important things. I'll do a simulcast with Stuart Varney. He's going to bring up that some Democrats are mocking Democrats because of their unhinged response to Donald Trump. I mean, nutty response to Donald Trump and his blizzard of executive orders and actions. So let's get to the big three.
Number three.
Vaccines save lives. Mr. Kennedy has asked for my input into hiring decisions at HHS, these commitments, and my expectation that we can have a great working relationship to make America healthy again is the basis of my support.
And he did get his support. Dr. Cassidy on the fence no longer. RFK and Tulsi on the fast track to getting confirmed. Pam Bondi is green-lighted, and Dems still trying to derail cash. We'll discuss it.
Number two.
I think the potential in the Gaza Strip is unbelievable. They've tried the other, and they've tried it for decades and decades and decades. It's not going to work. We have an opportunity to do something that could be phenomenal.
That is President Trump with a brand new idea. Have Gaza Strip be turned over to America. Blowing their minds. President Trump's solution for Gaza and almost all caught by surprise as that he offered what I just told you. Israel never had a better friend in the White House, according to Israel, and Iran a more dead serious enemy, according to everybody.
Number one.
We have to fight this in the courts. We have to fight this in the Congress. We have to fight this in the streets.
We have got to tell Elon Musk nobody elected you.
Are you ready to stand up and defend our democracy?
Is this crazy? These are the Democratic responses to Elon Musk and Doge. The cuts are everywhere, and the getting into fiscal shape is necessary. We are $1.5 trillion annually over budget. Doge shaves off $1 billion a day. USAID, CIA, FBI, education, all put on notice. Every dime, every agent will be examined. Predictably, Dems' collective heads are exploding. So I love what Elon Musk is doing. It is so much different than I thought. This is my image in the best scenario, that Elon Musk would use his cost-cutting ability, his business acumen, his great inventiveness, and, of course, the latest in AI and tech advancements to make a more efficient government. But a lot of it would just get frustrated because Congress would not okay it. Instead, he's in there making rapid changes, sleeping in his office. They're bringing beds into the Eisenhower building, which is always half empty. And what he's doing is just producing. And he's going in there and he's seeing what the spending's going. Now, where is it going? Good question. So he asked the same question. He met with department heads. He talked to other people about plans that they had. He understood he's never been in government before. He's running seven major businesses, richest man in the world. So he brought his guys in, mostly engineers and women, and he said, let's start taking a look at this. He has told friends he considers the ultimate metric $1 billion saving by the day. And he's sorting through ideas. Right now, he wants to cut down the $1.8 trillion deficit. How do you do that? Well, he found the GAO and the government made $236 billion in improper payments. Is anybody against stopping improper payments? Three quarters of which were overpayments across 71 agencies. Number one, if I'm a Democrat, know what I say? Thank you. Where are these agencies? What else can be done? So far, I'm not even asked to make a tough decision. Yes, forget overpayments. Ask for a refund if possible. Treasury's analyzing income and outgoing money. That's what he wanted to do. And he came across USAID. And he's saying, where are the books? What are they spending it on? What is USAID doing? This is separate from the State Department, which has its own budget. So is USAID saving lives? I'm sure they are. Are they helping to fight hunger in developing nations? Sure. Are they providing vaccines? Yeah, I hear they are. PET4 with the whole, you know, the malaria nets to saving lives that George Bush put together comes to mind. But they're also heavy into their woke agenda, and they get offended when asked about it. Senator Joni Ernst, who's working hand in glove with Musk, said he went up to USAID 2 years ago, and he said, what's with your budget? I can't get a hold of what you're spending all this money on. And they told her to basically go jump in a lake. She said that they said that they started threatening her team in a brazen effort to obstruct congressional oversight. The senator said that the agency stonewalled her last year when she just tried to investigate where's the money going. They say, no, Senator, you can't look at it. Really? Maybe one of the reasons that you can't look at it is because you have $1.5 million to advance DEI in Serbia, 70,000 for the production of DEI musical in Ireland. By the way, big anti-Semitic government. 47,000 for a trans opera in Colombia. I'm not kidding. I mean, it sounds like the Babylon Bee. 32,000 for a trans comic in Peru. And it goes on like this. When questioned about it, they said, you have no right to look at the contracts. Trump and Musk go in there, and Trump says, blow it up. He says, are you sure? He goes, yeah, we're going to fold it into the State Department. Why are Democrats losing their mind? Elon Musk, a billionaire, is running this country. We never elected him. Well, you didn't elect Marco Rubio. You didn't elect Scott Bessent. You didn't elect Pam Bondi. But you elected the guy that appointed them. So get used to it. What else do you worry about? Here is Democrats going crazy about USAID. Brian Schatz, Chris Van Hollen, Jamie Raskin. I'll play as much as I can tolerate. Cut seven.
In the last 10 days, Donald Trump has done more to destabilize things across the planet than perhaps any other president in recent memory.
It's not only a gift to our adversaries, but trying to shut down the Agency for International Development by executive order is plain illegal.
We don't have a fourth branch of government called Elon Musk. And that's going to become real clear.
This is a constitutional crisis that we are in today. Let's call it what it is.
We talked about Trump wanting to be a dictator on day one, and here we are. This is what the beginning of dictatorship looks like.
I don't know what you're talking about. Executive orders, a man in action, pick a lane. Do something. He's doing everything. Congress is going to work through with tax reform. They got to come through with spending, defense spending increases. That's no doubt about it. But he also has an opportunity to be president, and he knows how to do it, and he's showing everyone. Catch him if you can. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show. Gerard Baker, editor-at-large of the Wall Street Journal, next. Don't move.
Politics, current events, and news that affects you. Brian's got a lot more to say. Stay with Brian Kilmeade. Breaking news, unique opinions. Hear it all on the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Let's just take Super Bowl Sunday. It's going to affect beer. Most of it, Corona here, comes from Mexico. It's going to affect your guac. Because what is guacamole made of? Avocados, both from Mexico. If you have pizza, it's going to affect the cost of cheese.
Your response to the trade war is to f***ing tell us guacamole is made of avocados? Democrats, can you please stop f***ing trotting Schumer out there? Every time Trump traverses into the unreal. He's not good at this.
So that is John Stewart, who I think gets it. He's not going to ever vote for Trump, not say anything nice about him, but he understands the country has spoken. And the ridiculous responses from the Democrats since Election Day have been just pathetic, led by that guy, Chuck Schumer. He's an embarrassment to New York. Never goes to bat against anti-Semitism, any of this wokeness on campus. Never makes a courageous decision unless it helps his party. What about his country or his state? Gerard Baker joins us now, editor-at-large of the Wall Street Journal, host of the Wall Street Journal at Large, Fridays at 7:30. Gerard, welcome back. Your thoughts about John Stewart's perception?
You know, yeah, as you say, he's a smart guy. He's right. He's his politics are... are very far left, but he gets it because he understands that if you want to make a good case for what he believes in, even if we don't believe in it, the last person you want doing that is Chuck Schumer. I mean, for Schumer to be out there saying, you know, it's just laughable being out there saying, you know, you're not going to get any beer and you're not going to have any guacamole. It just becomes literally, instead of, you know, addressing the arguments. And by the way, Brian, as you know, and in fact, I wrote my column this week saying I think these idea of tariffs against Mexico and Canada were not a very good idea. In fact, were ridiculous. But the argument against them is not that we're not going to have enough guacamole for Super Bowl Sunday or our Corona beer. You know, the arguments, there are much more sophisticated arguments than that. So, yeah, but the broader point here, Brian, and the point you've made many times, You know, and we saw this with that DNC meeting at the weekend, is the Democrats have learned nothing and forgotten nothing. They don't, you know, they don't seem to understand what happened on November the 5th last year. November the 5th last year was not just a victory for Donald Trump. It was a rejection of everything that the kind of, not just the Democrats themselves, not just the Democratic Party and Kamala Harris and Joe Biden and Chuck Schumer, but the establishment that has been supporting and supportive and been supported by the Democratic Party for the last 20 years with its DEI, with its critical race theory, with its ideas about, you know, U.S., you know, the U.S. history and all of this stuff, all this kind of woke, crazy stuff, open borders, that was all rejected on November the 5th last year. And smart Democrats get it and understand and say, we need to change. But there's no evidence at all in the leadership of the Democratic Party, whether it's Chuck Schumer or whether it's this new guy, Ken Martin, or whether it's, you know, you saw that performance at the weekend from those Democratic candidates. They were asked, why did Kamala Harris lose the election? They all put their hand up when they were asked if it was because of racism and sexism. Well, you know, that tells you just how they don't understand the American people. If you think, if your approach to losing an election is basically to blame the American people for being bad people, which is essentially what that is, then you have lost the plot completely, and that's where they are.
How did you feel about President Trump going on with the tariffs? He wasn't pleased that you guys were against him, and they got a one-month reprieve with Mexico because they decided to put 10,000 more people at the border. What he said on that.
Did you blink this morning?
There was no blinking. No, she's a wonderful woman, but she did agree to 10,000 soldiers on the border. I would say that's a lot. Would you say that's pretty good? 10,000 soldiers on the border?
Sir, the
10,000 soldiers are going to keep illegal aliens out, and they're going to keep them out seriously out, and otherwise they're going to have a big penalty. Mexico's going to be penalized. They're not going to come through Mexico anymore. And they're not going to let the fentanyl come in from China. And China hopefully is going to stop sending us fentanyl. And if they're not, the tariffs are going to go substantially higher.
So the 10% on China, they responded. President says, okay, the call with President Xi is off. But your thought about this, what's really going on behind the scenes with Mexico and Canada?
I think, frankly, President Trump blinked. Look, he came in to office saying he loves tariffs, right? And he loves, and by the way, I believe him on that. I think he genuinely believes that tariffs, you know, and there, you know, we can have an argument about that. I think tariffs do help, perhaps, in helping to repatriate some American manufacturing. That's a good thing. Tariffs, in the end, though, tariffs are a very blunt instrument because they hurt Americans as much as they hurt, almost as much as they hurt the other country too. So they're not a great idea. But on this, you know, on this particular thing, he, having said tariffs are a great idea, he then withdraws them when, you know, Sheinbaum says she's going to put 10,000 troops on the border, and Trudeau says he's going to appoint a fentanyl czar. I mean, that isn't tough diplomacy, Brian. I mean, 10,000, Sheinbaum saying she's going to put 10,000 troops on the border, that's like me saying I'm not going to eat any more donuts, right, for the rest of the year. You know, let's verify it, all right? Let's see if they do actually show up on the border. Let's see what the Mexican military has not been very effective at stopping illegal immigration. They did this under Biden, remember? They agreed to put 10,000 additional troops on the border in 2021 under Biden. Nothing happened. So the idea that this is a massive victory for the U.S., a massive diplomatic victory, having got the, you know, having threatened these countries with these massive sanctions to get them to do this big concession, just doesn't add up. So I think, look, nobody in his administration, Scott Bessent, the Treasury Secretary, Kevin Hassett, his Chief Economic Advisor in the White House, nobody thinks tariffs are a good idea, and they're certainly not a very good way of dealing with. We do absolutely have a fentanyl crisis in this country, and something needs to be done about it. And Mexico is primarily responsible, and China is secondarily responsible, and we should absolutely hold them to account and make sure they do more to address it. Using tariffs like that is not the way to do it. It would have hurt Americans, and I'm glad, frankly, he saw sense. The stock market didn't like it. One thing Trump doesn't like is looking at the stock market falling under his watch, and I think he backed off.
A couple other things, just judging on the Trump observations. You know, he goes in, yep. Oh, that's not typical. If you look at the math, let's not focus on Canada and Mexico. Okay. Yep. And if you want drug problems, just say, I want the drugs to stop. But the way Trump does it, he pushed way back. He shocked his system. They have emergency meetings. They have press conferences there in bewilderment. But they walk away going, we better do this because this is only going to get worse for us. And they would pay more of a price than us on any type of tariff situation, especially Canada. So he's trying
China? Yeah. So what's Canada going to do, Brian? What's the new fentanyl czar in Canada going to do? that's going to stop. You know how much fentanyl was seized at the Canadian border in 2024? 43 pounds. I think it's something like 10,000 pounds on the Mexican border. I'm all for standing up to, you know, getting tough, and don't talk to me about, you know, about Justin Trudeau. I have the least favorable opinion of Justin Trudeau over probably anybody you'll ever meet, and he's going to lose. Thank God he's going to step down in a few months' time, and then his party's going to be trounced at the polls, and a real conservative is going to win in Canada, which is great news. But what has he done? You know, what has Trump forced them to do that he wasn't going to do about the fentanyl problem or the illegal migrant problem across the Canada border? Because neither of them are serious problems.
But I would say the northern border, and talking to Governor Sununu, he said it is a huge problem we need to get a hold of. We've never seen anything quite like that. And we would never find out about Washington State. So we'll see. I think that what he's doing is plowing the ground. I think you also see the benefit with Panama. I love the pushback on China, but you don't think it's part of a grand strategy.
Look, I think what China's doing around the world, and by the way, this is why this is important and much more important than what Canada's, what's going on at the border between, you know, New Hampshire and Ontario. China is challenging America around the world. It is steadily tightening its grip on countries around the world. It's giving huge amounts of aid and economic assistance to countries in Africa and Latin America. It's building big economic facilities, including on the Panama Canal, two Hong Kong companies with big facilities on the Panama Canal. It's building military bases in Africa. It's a major threat. And Panama, I completely agree with the president on the Panama Canal. It is a real problem. They have the ability. If they choke off the Panama Canal, that's half of U.S. imports and exports gone right there.
And Greenland, too, could be part of helping us with the Arctic. Thanks, Gerard Baker, Wall Street Journal. He's the best.
The fastest 3 hours in radio. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
That's life, though. You're going to have adversities. You're going to have up and downs. But it's who you are in those moments. And I never lost faith. And I just kept my head down and kept working and was able to get here and be able to surround myself with unbelievable individuals. And, you know, when you're able to do that, you're able to have a lot of success. It's a little easier this year, right, when you got those big guys up front creating the holes they've been creating. But that's part of it, you know. The O-line job is to block the guys who they have, and I'm responsible for one. And when I get to, you know, my responsibility, I got to make the guy miss.
And one of the main reasons Saquon's always been unbelievably talented, I had a chance to see him in New York from day one of his career, but he never has looked this good. How much does that have to do with the offensive line? I say a lot, but when you have Anthony Munoz on the line, who cares about my opinion? He's the best offensive lineman maybe in the history of the league at 13 years with one team, the Cincinnati Bengals. He got to the Super Bowl a couple of times, inductions to the Hall of Fame in 1998, and he's also the recipient of the 1990 Bart Starr Award. Anthony, wouldn't be a Super Bowl week without talking to you. Thanks so much for joining us.
Hey, Brian, always a pleasure talking to you. You know what? It's a highlight for me, too, Super Bowl week. But, it's interesting. I caught the end of that conversation, and I'll tell you, I've been out of the league for a long time, but I would have had a blast blocking for that young man. I love watching him run, but the guy's just amazing. But you're right. I mean, I heard you talk about the offensive line. When you have Maleda and Johnson at the tackles, as far as I'm concerned, two of the best in the league, Dickerson, Becton, the guards, and Jurgen, the center. In my humble opinion, if not the best offensive line in the NFL, one of the best. So it goes hand in hand. I mean, you know, you need that offensive line, busting their tails, running the blocking scheme, and then you need a disciplined, and I guess he's got a little bit of talent in the backfield running the football. So it is fun to watch them run the football.
And remember last year we were talking about what happened to the running game. Is it gone from the league? Do the fans want to see the passing game? And are they responding to that with this new look NFL and with the older restrictions now on defensive backs? And now Saquon changed all that. Derrick Henry changed all that. Now we're talking about the running game again.
You know, you're right. And I still am a firm believer. I don't care what level you're playing on, high school, college, and the NFL. If you're going to win a championship, you need to run the football. And even with the Chiefs in the past, they run the ball pretty well when they need to. And I think that's what you have to do. You can have a quarterback and wide receivers that are throwing for 4,000 or 5,000 yards or whatever, you know, they average. But you still need a guy like Barkley who can run the football. You still need offensive linemen that aren't in a two-point stance all the time. That they're going to get down to three-point and they're going to say, okay, I'm coming after you. I'm going to knock you off the line of scrimmage, and it's your job to stop that. So I'm a firm believer that guys you mentioned, Henry and Barkley, and, you know, there's other guys that have, you know, brought that focus back. And I think people realize you need to see the run, because you need, in order to win championships, I really believe you need to be able to run the football.
So a guy named Travis Kelce might be in his last game, although he says he wants to keep playing. He talked about this being, and this Eagle team being different and better, perhaps. Cut 51.
This is going to be our biggest test yet. They got a lot of great players, but the biggest thing is they play great together. You can see their communication. You can see the accountability that they have, especially in the secondary. It's not going to make my job any easier, especially with those guys up front trying to get to pass. So it's going to be a tough test, but I think right now we got a great game plan together, and we're going to keep, you know, sharpening our tools.
So they're obviously very confident. They don't lose. Every game that's close, they win, and every game is close. It's almost as if they broke the mold and said, you can't pace yourself in the NFL. Anthony, it seemed like they kind of did.
Hey, you know what? It's one of those things. I really believe when you get in the habit of doing something over and over, you get used to it and you end up doing it. They're in the habit of winning. They're expecting to win. But I agree with Travis. This Eagles team is a pretty good football team. I mean, the Chiefs, there's no question about it. They're an excellent football team. And, Brian, we started off by talking about their offense. We didn't talk about A.J. Brown or Devontae Smith or even Jalen Hurt. But defensively, they're pretty good. You got Jordan Davis. You got Jalen Carter. I mean, guys like that. You got Bond at linebacker, Darius Slay, Mitchell in the defensive secondary, Blankenship. So they are very, very good. And so I'm expecting an excellent football game. And, you know, a lot of people probably don't give them a chance to win because of the Chiefs and what they've done. But I think they're in a position to win this football game. I think they're an excellent football team also, the Eagles.
Yeah, we'll see what's going to happen. I think it's going to be real close. It's hard to find anybody who doesn't. So we'll talk about that. And what about Brian Schottenheimer? Marty Schottenheimer was your coach for years. Brian now gets his first head coaching job, and it's with the Dallas Cowboys. The word is it's because of his relationship with Dak Prescott. What do you think?
Well, yeah, I think that happens a lot. I think relationships, I think, you know, relatives that have been growing up. I mean, his dad was a pretty good, you know, head coach, and, you know, it's a great gene pool. And I really believe that happens a lot when guys have relationships and they've done well. More times than not, it's going to be an advantage for them when they're up for a job. So congratulations to Schottenheimer. I mean, you know, he's a guy that's been doing it for a long time. And when you see someone that's been doing it for a long time and they've been effective, it's a great opportunity. So, yeah, I agree that it probably is because of the relationship. And but then once you get there, you know, it's about wins and losses.
So when you look at what's going on in San Francisco with their coach, you look at now what's happening with Schottenheimer here, how much does it help when you grow up around the game? I'm sure you probably saw Brian hanging out with when Marty Schottenheimer was your coach. You absorb things
actually,
by growing up in
it. Yeah, actually, Brian, Marty was up in Cleveland, and I was in Cincinnati, but I got to – no, that's okay. I got to see him coach twice a year, and I still say that the best move that happened in our division is when he left and went to the Chiefs, because he is an excellent coach, Marty Schottenheimer. So I'm sure, just like a lot of coaches, there, you know, we had for 5 years here after I retired, we had Dave Shula, you know, Don Shula, one of the greatest coaches, if not the greatest coach of all time. We had him. So I really believe, just like you see guys that are playing in the league that have grown up around the game, you know, that helps out because you see the mindset, you see the work ethic, and you learn the game. So I think Schottenheimer being around the game, and there's another guy that had been around, you know, there's just so many guys that you see that they're like second, third generation guys of guys that have been around the game. You know, so I think it helps out a lot.
All right, so when you, Anthony, the Bengals have had success of late. They have an incredible quarterback, Joe Burrow. They seem to have a great coaching staff, but they're known as an extremely cheap organization. Are they going to start paying their players to keep these guys around?
You know, Brian, I think I think they've improved. Anytime you have a quarterback with the Bengals making $50 million, I think they're shelling some money out. They're going to have to continue to try and keep some guys around. You know, they got the Jamar Chase who's going to, has to get paid. But I think it's a matter of where you pay the money. You know, some teams might pay a lot of money, but the return of investment doesn't pay off because the guys they pay it to, they're not successful when they come to their team. So I think that has a lot to do with it too. Mm. They've paid some money, but the ROI on it has not been the best. So I think, how much longer before, the kids take over? Is it going to be different? I don't know. Mike Brown's getting up there in age. He took over from his dad, Paul Brown. Now you got his kids that are in line to take over. So I think it's a matter of how you utilize the funds that you're paying and make sure that if you're going to pay some money, make sure the guys that you pay it to are going to come in and be productive.
Absolutely. So let's talk about the Lindner Center of Hope. That's taking a lot of your time. Tell me about what it does and what you're going to be doing at the Great American Ballpark.
You know, Brian, anytime you have a family like the Lindner family, an unbelievable Cincinnati family, former owners of the Cincinnati Reds before the Castellinis, the baseball park is the Great American Ballpark. That's their insurance company. And their footprints are all over this great city. And so they decided several years ago to build this mental health facility. And it's something that my wife, Dee Dee, and I have been involved in Super Bowl night. Usually we don't go to the game. Usually we're there at site. So it's a Great American Ballpark. It's a tailgate open at 5:30. You just get there with a bunch of friends. They're gonna have a bunch of big screen TVs at the Great American at the Bally Club there, and we're just gonna get there and raise some money for the Lindner Center of Hope. We call it Touchdown for Hope. So you wear your jersey, and hopefully, I don't see any Cleveland Brown jerseys or Pittsburgh Steelers jerseys that night. Hopefully, they're all Bengal jerseys. But it'll be fun. It's a great time. To get there and raise money for the Lindner Center of Hope. Craig and Francis Lindner, the Lindner that started this, that run it. And it's just a phenomenal, phenomenal facility that is world known now. We get people from around the world coming in for treatment, and they do an amazing job.
And when is this?
This is actually Super Bowl night. We'll be watching the Super Bowl, big screen TVs at Great American Ballpark. So I'm not actually – if you can believe it, Brian, this is like the first year in over 30 years that I'm actually not in the Super Bowl site. Decided I'm just going to stay home. So Dee Dee and I are going to watch the game, big screen TVs at Great American Ballpark, big tailgate party at the Bally Sports Club there at Great American.
And by the way, support the Anthony Munoz Foundation. You're always doing great things for the tri-state youth and those vulnerable at-risk kids. Anthony Munoz Foundation. Anthony, thanks so much.
Always a pleasure, Brian. Have a great day.
You got it. When we come back, I'm going to go live and do a simulcast with Stuart Varney. We'll talk about John Stewart.
Now, the Brian Kilmeade Show joins Fox Business's Varney & Company with Stuart Varney, live on your radio and on Fox Business. Here's Brian Kilmeade.
Just quick note, I'm going to be February 15th. It's coming up real quick, Saturday night. We've opened up the second balcony now, BrianKilmeade.com, History, Liberty, and Laughs. I had a chance to talk to you, patriotic, inspirational, informational night. We look back at our history, my 7 history books, my 2 sports books. But most of all, it's on stage. We bring history to life. I'll be doing that on February 15th at Florida Theater in Jacksonville. And then on the 22nd, I'm going to be in St. Louis at the Factory, BrianKilmeade.com. Let's listen in now. FBM.
I'm going to count it down. Any moment now, it's going to be Brian Kilmeade on the right-hand side of the screen. Please do it for me. Thank you very much. There he is, the lad himself. Okay. Brian, Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer started chanting, "We will win." Big time. Daily Show host Jon Stewart didn't think much of that. Watch this.
I am going to stand with you in this fight, and we will win. We will win.
Your response to the trade war is to tell us guacamole is made of avocados? Democrats. Can you please stop trotting Schumer out there? Every time Trump traverses into the unreal,
he's not good at this.
You know, Brian, I think John Stewart's right. What do you say?
I think John Stewart's got the right tone. Never a Trump fan, never will be, never vote for him. But he understands the American people did. So he's taking them game by game, order by order, move by move. And these other guys, led by Chuck Schumer, who is not a good leader, he's not a good orator, he doesn't think good in his feet, he doesn't think anything authentic. It's all what helps the Democratic Party. If Chuck Schumer really stood for anything, he would have stood up as a Jewish American, the highest rank in our history, against the anti-Semitic behavior at NYU, Columbia, at City College. But he doesn't. He now thinks screaming into a microphone. When you have a microphone, ladies and gentlemen, you don't have to scream, Maxine Waters. Screaming, we're going to fight. What are you going to fight? You're pro-LGBT Peru parades? You're pro-DEI assemblies in Serbia? That's the U.S. aid. You have Elon Musk going in, trying to cut budgets, lean out organizations, because get this, we are $1.4 trillion over budget with the budget Joe Biden left. So not only do we have a deficit, we're $1.4 trillion over. Elon Musk is in, looking at what's coming in, what's coming out. He's already identified $240 billion in fraud. He says we're saving $1 billion a day. So they get up and chant against Trump and Elon Musk. And turns out AOC doesn't think Elon Musk is bright. She says he's the dumbest billionaire she knows. I don't know what to say about that. The bartender from Queens is not impressed with the richest, most successful man in the world. I don't know how to bridge that gap.
The bartender from Queens. That's a good put down. All right, Brian, listen to this one. President Trump reacted to Biden signing with a talent agency. Watch.
What do you think about Joe Biden signing on with a talent agency?
You got to be kidding. He signed on with a talent agency?
He does. He's got some entertainment agents now.
I think he's got bigger problems than that. I really do. I think he's got much bigger problems than that, but I wish him well. We inherited a mess. This place is a mess, but it's quickly being solved, the problem. We're going to make America great again.
Brian, let me pick up on that. Trump said Biden has much bigger problems. Do you think there's a lot of people are saying, look, maybe China had something over Biden, and that's a big problem. What say you?
I don't know. I know that they lied about the business dealings in China. He lied. They didn't know that Hunter Biden was on Air Force Two to do a business deal with China, because you know what emerged 2 weeks after he lost the election, or Kamala Harris lost the election? Pictures of him with Hunter Biden on that same trip when he was vice president with the Chinese investors that went into the company, that went to seven different Bidens. But they say that none went into Joe's account. But Joe was the commodity. So read James Comer's book. Take a second. The other story is, Stewart, you had no problem saying it. No one taxed people, but the guy was not there for 4 years. The most covered up story in media history, president history, is that he didn't do the job, that he wasn't capable of functioning more than 2 hours a day. And they lied about it. They didn't pursue it. They ridiculed people that brought it up. It's beginning to come out now, but that's going to be the biggest story. And that's why the media is on their heels right now. That's why they're writing checks to the Trump Foundation and Library. And CBS will be the next one to write it, because they doctored an interview to make Kamala Harris look good. So when you have problems with the media today, present company excluded, I think you just have to look at how they didn't cover the last 4 years.
It's an untold story, but it's going to be told. Brian Kilmeade, thanks a lot. So, see you again real soon.
Yeah, I'm going to go out to Lee is in Virginia. We'll try to squeeze in some calls before the end of the hour. Hey, Lee. Les, I'm sorry, Les. What's on your mind?
That's okay. Yes, sir. You had made the comparison earlier to Pam Bondi and things like that as far as unelected people, but I think we need to point out the Democrats that weren't elected that we had to follow, like Fauci, because the world basically had to listen to him for 4 years on like every word that came out of his mouth.
That's a great point, Les. They're part of the infrastructure of the government that didn't even come in with the president. He was there already. And the reason why he was empowered, because Trump had problems with him. Everything that Trump did, Biden reversed. Now, I know that's a tendency with administrations, but pumping up Anthony Fauci when they already found out that most of the stuff he was saying was wrong hurt the entire country. And Elon Musk is doing something. Look, he has his best people in there trying to just, and wants everyone to justify the spending in government. What is wrong with that? Don't you wonder we're the, I think we give $4.5 trillion in revenue and we continue to be productive, but we're running at a deficit. Doesn't that even make you curious? Well, Musk said, I'm going to use my skills not to reform space or get special contracts or get a fancy job, just to work for free to do the government efficiency. And he's finding it even worse than we thought. He's going to use AI to decide what really should be spending and not spending, how to stop duplication of job descriptions. This is going to help the country. And sooner or later, people realize that. But they decide to sit it out. First, it was Ron Rocahana and others saying, I want to get on board with that. Now they're afraid.
News radio studios in Midtown Manhattan. It's the fastest growing radio talk show. Brian Kilmeade.
Thanks so much for being here, everybody. It's the Brian Kilmeade Show. I come to you from 48th and 6th in Midtown Manhattan. So glad you're here. Don't forget One Nation. I know it's only Wednesday, but we got a big show Saturday night. Anthony Robbins amongst our many guests. And we have Carly Shimkus is breaking down what's happening with media, which is almost falling apart. It looks like 60 Minutes has got to give up their transcript now of their interview with Kamala Harris. I don't even trust the transcript to be right because they're desperate. They're going to show how they edited it to make her look good. And now they're going to end up paying out Trump. I think he's suing him for, millions of dollars. Zvika Klein is going to be with us. He is the editor-in-chief of the Jerusalem Post. Man, is there action as Bibi Netanyahu becomes the first world leader to visit us here in the U.S. and Donald Trump. So, and also Senator Rick Scott is standing by. Let's get to the big three.
Number three.
Vaccines save lives. Mr. Kennedy has asked for my input into hiring decisions at HHS. These commitments and my expectation that we can have a great working relationship to make America healthy again is the basis of my support.
Senator Cassidy, the doctor, says RFK is okay with me. He's out of committee. Tulsi also on the fast track as Pam Bondi gets green-lighted. And now the Dems want to try again to derail Kash Patel. We'll discuss all these, I think, un-American delays.
Number two.
I think the potential in the Gaza Strip is unbelievable. They've tried the other, and they've tried it for decades and decades and decades. It's not going to work. We have an opportunity to do something that could be phenomenal.
And that's what he's doing, blowing their minds. President Trump offers solutions for Gaza. It is out of the box. Caught everybody by surprise. Maybe even Netanyahu. We'll talk about that as he proclaims that Donald Trump is the best friend Israel has ever had in the White House.
Number one.
We have to fight this in the courts. We have to fight this in the Congress. We have to fight this in the streets.
We have got to tell Elon Musk nobody elected you.
Are you ready to stand up and defend our democracy?
So do you believe this? I mean, the language, number one, grow up. Number two, what are you even saying? All eyes on Musk and Doge. As cuts they are recommending are now causing uproars. Why? They're not Republican cuts or Democratic cuts. He's trying to get our financial house in order. He's already shaving off, they think, $1 billion a day. USAID, CIA, FBI, education are all put on notice. Senator Rick Scott joins us right now. A very successful business person before he jumped into politics and knows what it's like to have a budget. He's also on Homeland Security, Armed Services Committee. Senator, welcome back. Your thoughts about the uproar about Elon Musk?
Well, yeah, it's uproar because the Democrats don't care how we waste money. I mean, they don't care that we're running $2 trillion deficits. They don't care that interest rates are up. They don't care that inflation is up. They just want, you know, I don't get who they think they represent. They clearly don't represent Americans that are worried about their families, their jobs, their kids' education, their public safety. I don't know who they think they represent anymore. But look, I'm appreciative of what Donald Trump is doing. I'm appreciative of what Elon Musk is doing. He's coming up with ideas. I did the same thing. You know, it's what we do in business. We have to look at how do we save money. What I do when I became governor of Florida, we walked in with a big budget deficit. I had to balance a budget. I had to say, where's the waste? Let's get rid of it. And so I think what they're doing is what the American public expects everybody to do when they come into government.
So what he's did is he asked Treasury for a look only, can't touch it, to see incoming receipts and outgoing. And he wants people to justify what they're doing. He said the federal deficit was $1.8 trillion. The GAO estimated that in a report that the government made $236 billion in improper payments, three-quarters of which were overpayments in 71 federal different programs. This is a fact. Why are you against that? They don't like the fact that he wasn't elected. Well, outside Trump and Vance, nobody's elected. They didn't elect right. Pam Bondi. They didn't elect Marco Rubio. He chose him.
The bottom line is this has been going on year after year. During the Biden administration, there was, I think it was about $250 billion a year of payments to the wrong people, overpayments, all sorts of things, and they did nothing. They did nothing to get the money back. But, I mean, $200 plus billion year after year after year. USAID. I mean, it's going places like, why are we sending money to Afghanistan? Why? Why are we sending money to places that hate our guts? It doesn't make sense. This is your money. It makes me mad when you just hear these stories. I'm very appreciative of what Elon Musk is doing.
So I want you to hear what Congresswoman Ayanna Pressley said. Think about this for a second. Cut three.
Elon Musk is a Nazi nutball baby. A godless, lawless billionaire who no one elected. Elon, this is the American people. This is not your trashy Cybertruck that you can just dismantle, pick apart, and sell the pieces of.
That's a lawmaker that somebody wants in office.
That's crazy. I mean, here's a guy that cares about this country and is trying to protect this country. If we want inflation to come down, if we want interest rates to come down, we've got to balance the budget. And by the way, who in God's green earth believes we should waste money? Like, you want your money wasted? You think about how you spend your money every day. That's almost every American has to do that every day just to make ends meet. Your federal government, your state government, your local government should have to do the exact same thing. Quit wasting money. There's so much waste. I've been fighting this. I did it my 8 years as governor. I balance the budget every year, and I've been fighting it every day up here. We have got to balance the budget and start spending money on the things that American public want, and we got to pick and choose what we're going to do. We can't. We're going to collect. Like $5.5 trillion. We shouldn't spend more than $5.5 trillion. Actually, we should save money every year for the future in case we have a problem, another pandemic, or we end up going to war or something. We should be saving money every year for potential. That's what a family does. That's what you and I have to do in our families. We say, well, something might happen. Somebody might get sick. Somebody might lose their job. Let's save our money.
I love the idea that working through the weekends, they're just trying to straighten out the budget. But I would bring up a couple other things. They're also talking to tightening the belts, and John Ratcliffe's on board with this, at the CIA. Obviously, at the Pentagon, that's going to be a major factor as they try. You guys got to get more money into the Pentagon to get the multiple threats around the world. But I also think they're looking to cut at the FBI. They're looking to cut USAID entirely. They froze all the accounts. How do you feel about U.S. aid? I want you to hear what Bill Gates said. Cut eight.
I'm a little worried, particularly with this USAID stuff. Mm-hmm. My foundation partners with USAID on nutrition and getting vaccines out. And, you know, there's incredible people. Hopefully we'll get some of that work back in shape.
So a lot of these programs are cut or on hold. Your thoughts?
Well, I think Marco Rubio is doing exactly what he should do. When you take something over, like I turned around companies, right? When I walked in, I had to say, okay, we're losing money. This is going to stop today. We're going to start looking at every penny. Like you have to look at your bank account every day. And you check, how did I spend my money? What did I live within my budget? We should be doing the exact same thing here and say, you know what? There's some lot of nice to haves, but when we're running deficits, right? We can't do those things. And we should say, what are the most important things? And pick and choose. And look, and here's what I did when I was governor of Florida. 4,000 lines of the budget. Every line of the budget, I had a written purpose. If you didn't meet that purpose over the next year, I'd cut the funding. What would you do? If somebody doesn't provide you a service, you don't keep paying for it.
Mm-hmm.
That's exactly what Elon Musk is doing. That's what Marco Rubio is doing. They're saying, let's go look and see what works and what doesn't work. That's exactly what they ought to be doing. And that's what Trump got elected to do. He got elected to hold the federal government accountable. And so I'm proud of what Marco's doing. I'm proud of what Elon Musk is doing. Trump's doing. They're doing the things that the American public want.
So what do you think about the president's plan? He said, why don't we make Gaza more of an international place? We'll rebuild it. The Arab, the Middle East, other nations, wealthy nations will pay for it. And tell the Palestinians they should really leave. It's too dangerous anyway. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I'm gonna learn more. I'm going to meet with Steve Witkoff a little bit later today to understand exactly what the president's going to do. But the concept, do we want to have a safe place for people to live? Better believe it. Do we want to support Israel? Yeah. Should the countries there that say they care about Palestinians be part of this? Yeah. Why not? Why aren't they? Why didn't they come up with the idea? So whatever it's going to take to make Israel safe, to make Gaza safe, to destroy Hamas and the Hezbollah and the Houthis and the Iran dictator, you know, Ayatollah, what they're doing, I'm all in, because they're destroying the Middle East and they're a menace to the whole world. So I think, okay, it's an out-of-the-box thinking. So we'll see what happens.
Here is phase two. I was on today with the senior advisor to the Qatar prime minister, who's really refereeing these meetings. Here's what they say is phase two. Cut 28.
Obviously, we are now quite busy with preparing for phase two of the negotiations, which will start hopefully any day now, which will lead to a more sustainable truce that will hopefully lead to the phase when we can have the reconstruction of Gaza and sustainable peace in the region. And the Trump administration, since they were the transition team, were very instrumental in getting this deal across. As you know, Brian, if it wasn't for President Trump's assertiveness and President Trump's decisions before even assuming office, we wouldn't have had this deal that we are working on implementing right now.
So what he's trying to say is Trump gets the Middle East. You got to be direct. You got to be blunt. You got to be tough. And anytime you're acquiesced, they look at it as weakness.
Well, here's a bottom line. Qatar, Qatar, whatever. They need to stop giving money to Hamas. Tell Hamas today, release the hostages and drop your arms. That's what they ought to be doing today. We have a military base there. That military base should not be there if they're going to sit there and continue to support Hamas. Hamas destroyed, killed 1,200 people. They're still holding American hostages. They haven't released all the American hostages. So what needs to happen right now is release all the hostages. Hamas needs to drop their arms, all right? And then guess what? We all live in peace and harmony. But while Hamas is around, we will never be there. So I'm. Look, it all sounds really nice what Qatar's doing, but they are harboring the leadership of Hamas. They're harboring them. They killed American citizens. They're holding American citizens hostage. So they are held accountable for what Hamas is doing because they're enabling Hamas right now. So I'm optimistic. I'm optimistic something good's going to happen here. But let's live in reality. Why haven't the hostages been released? Release them.
Yeah, I don't think Qatar can possibly get them to release the hostages. They have no army.
Why are they giving money? Why are they giving money to Hamas? Why are they allowing Hamas leadership to live in Qatar right now? Why? Tell me, get the hell out of my country. Would I harbor a terrorist organization in my country intentionally? That's what they're doing.
Yeah, I think that there's some thought perhaps there that Netanyahu doesn't even mind that they're there because they need to negotiate with them. Well, let them figure that out. RFK Jr., Tulsi are on the fast track to confirmation, but they want to take another look, does Blumenthal, at Kash Patel. Listen to this, cut 42.
Those massive purges are directly contrary to the assurances we were given by Kash Patel. He said to us, when I asked him directly, pointedly, all FBI employees will be protected against political retribution. This retribution undermines enforcement by the FBI of drug cases and terrorism and other criminal cases. I ask, Mr. Chairman, that we call back Kash Patel to explain how he could deny that there would be political retribution when the next day, in fact, these massive purges began.
So what happened is they told those guys who had to do with leading the investigation, you got to go. But they did clarify a short time ago, said if you were just following orders, that's not you. But if you were conspiring to take down Trump, that's the issue. So they want to bring Kash Patel back. Does he have the power to do that?
Well, no, the Republicans run the committee. So, this is Democrats just delaying Kash Patel. I think what we have 13 Trump nominees done at this time. Obama had 23 or something like that. So this is just delay, obstruct, lie, you know, all these things. This is what they're doing. So the Kash Patel is going to do exactly what he needs. We need transparency to the FBI. We need accountability to the FBI. And if you're part of the group that's trying to use your power to take down President Trump, you shouldn't be there.
So what do they have the power to do? How long can they put Kash Patel's vote on hold? Isn't it up to the committee chair?
Yeah, Kash Patel is going to come to the committee. He's going to get the votes. He's going to be confirmed on the floor. This is just the Democrats coming up with any way under the sun to delay things. That's what they've been doing since Trump came into office. They're going to keep doing this. It's just part of what they do every time. But fortunately, last night, Bondi got confirmed, which is great. She's my friend. She was attorney general when I was governor. She's going to do a great job. It looks like RFK will get confirmed hopefully this week. We're going to get this done because we're going to work out. I'm going to work every day to help make sure these are great people that are going to bring transparency and accountability to these federal agencies, which need it. The American public has lost trust in the leadership, not the people of the FBI, the leadership of the FBI, and that's got to change. And Kash Patel will make that change.
Yeah, I look forward to it. I would see what type of delay. It seems like every agency is being scrutinized, and some resent it. That's got to stop. Senator Rick Scott, thank you so much.
Hey, Brian, have a great day.
You got it. Bottom of the hour, we go out to Jerusalem, the Jerusalem Post editor-in-chief. Next is you, 1-866-408-7669. We also look at Bill Cassidy. You'll find out why the senator and doctor said RFK, okay with me.
Illuminating, intriguing, inculcating.
I know some of these words.
It's Brian Kilmeade. The talk show that's getting you talking. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
Why should you be unhappy to sign it if it's Iran and their proxies who have threatened to retaliate against you and your team by killing you guys for taking out Soleimani?
Well, they haven't done that, and that would be a terrible thing for them to do. Not because of me. If they did that, they would be obliterated. That would be the end. I've left instructions. If they do it, they get obliterated. There won't be anything left. And they shouldn't be able to do it. And Biden should have said that, but he never did. I don't know why.
Should anything happen to me, let's destroy Iran. That'll keep them at bay. They have to wonder what is going on here. You never had a president talk like this. Yeah, you try to assassinate me. I'm not holding a grudge. If you do and you're successful, you haven't yet, I will destroy every one of you and your family. Interesting. Sandra in New Jersey. Hey, Sandra.
Oh, hi, Brian. I want to say that for half of my life, I was listening to the channel next to yours, but I decided to switch. I have my reasons. And let me tell you, it was the best thing I ever did. Brian, first of all, I've learned so much more with you. You are such a kind and gentle man and so smart. I am so happy with my decision. And I wanted to comment that the other day you spoke about Chris Christie saying that, you know, purging all the FBI men might be a good thing or a bad thing.
What he said is you lose a lot of experience. Regardless of what you think of them, you leave the FBI at a deficit at a time in which you need more, not less.
Yeah, that's like so in a way he kind of is right. So, because it takes like 18 months to hire somebody new, and then we're left with no one.
Right. We got 35,000, but there's some people that got to go. And a lot of them will end up on CNN. So don't worry about them.
He's so busy, he'll make your head spin. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Now in the first days of your second term, you picked up right where you left off. Your leadership helped bring our hostages home, among them American citizens. You freed up munitions that have been withheld from Israel. They had been withheld from Israel in the midst of a 7-front war for our existence. and you just freed him. You ended unjust sanctions against law-abiding Israeli citizens. You boldly confronted the scourge of anti-Semitism.
So I thought Prime Minister Netanyahu, I always think is two steps ahead of whatever I'm thinking of. He's always playing this down the line. Whatever you think's happening, he's always a step ahead. He knows American politics and knows who he's dealing with. I sense he was somewhat overwhelmed and so relieved to be with somebody that wasn't going to blister him, didn't have to posture with, didn't have to have a different face in public than he has behind closed doors, didn't have to pretend that everything was good. It really was good. And if, say, being reined in, he had a president next to him who said, yeah, I think I'll take Gaza. Zvika Klein is watching from Jerusalem. He's the editor-in-chief of the Jerusalem Post. He wrote an article really everyone should really read. It's called The Two-State Delusion is Dead. Israel knows it. The world must accept it. Zvika, first off, your thoughts about yesterday's long press conference. How was it digested? How was it taken in Israel?
Well, first of all, I think you're pretty much spot on when it comes to the way that you just see Netanyahu's face sitting there in the Oval Office, and he's just like so positively overwhelmed. You know, certain things the president was saying, he wouldn't even be able to say out loud up until 24 hours ago. And suddenly, like, we're in a situation where, you know, people who are, you know, who left the government because they were afraid that Netanyahu wouldn't be staunch enough against Hamas are like, oh, we may come back into the government. So, you know, he and also I haven't seen him, Netanyahu, smile like this for a very long time.
I mean, it's impossible to understand the amount of pressure he's on. I don't care what you think of him. You voted for him, how much you think he's responsible for the 7th. OK, but since that time, the multiple fronts, the multiple challenges, the domestic turmoil, the physical, he's going through the hospital a bunch of times, and he's got also being sued personally, very Trump-like, that he was experiencing here. So to have somebody behind closed doors, they say that that Joe Biden was blistering him, that Tony Blinken was blistering him, and Jake Sullivan, same thing. What did you find out?
Yeah, I mean, listen, first of all, I mean, what he says about Gaza is just, it's interesting. You know, I mentioned in my column, you know, about 80% of Israelis supported this rhetoric, you know, give or take. And if you would survey Israelis 2 years ago, it probably would be very different. And I think now that an American president, and definitely one that's very popular in Israel, Donald Trump, says, Hamas won't rule Gaza, and 1.8 citizens of Gaza will be, encouraged to move to different countries. Whether this is like a negotiation technique or not is way more than most of us here in Israel would even expect.
I don't know if it's possible. I mean, to get a million plus people out, Saudi Arabia already said we can't do that. Jordan said we already took so many from Syria. We're already stressed to the gills. And maybe, Zvika, you should tell everybody what the history of the Palestinians in Egypt and Jordan and Lebanon is.
Right. I mean, yes. I mean, basically, there are millions of Palestinians who are refugees, even though, it's kind of stupid that they're kept refugees for such a long time. But in Jordan, in Syria and Lebanon, as well as in Egypt, because basically 1947 and the UN pretty much says there should be two states, right? There should be a Jewish state and there should be the Palestinian state. And they said, no, we don't want it. So, there was the war that we call the War of Independence. They call it the Nakba, a very negative kind of connotation there. So since many of them have been living in different places outside of Israel because they wouldn't accept Israel being a state. So and it is very complicated. But listen, if this is some way for him to get for Trump to get us, a good deal down the line, whether it normalization with Saudi Arabia and other Muslim countries, as well as, hopefully Israeli hostages being released and Hamas not being able to govern in Gaza, I think that would be something that most Israelis would definitely, sign on to.
So you say right now in your column that Trump found out that 7 out of every 10 Israelis support the idea of relocation. Among Jewish Israelis, 52% consider it a viable plan, while 30% say it's desirable but not realistic. More than 80% of Jewish Israelis support the idea in some form, and Arab Israelis, 54%, call the plan immoral. Obviously, there's going to be some different feelings. But Egypt doesn't want the Palestinians. They kicked him out, and so did Jordan kick him out, causes unrest.
Right. Right. So, I mean, listen, no one really has like a real, I mean, there are different solutions out there, but nothing really, I think, listen, also, I think what Trump threw out yesterday, by the way, he's been saying this for the past week. And a lot of people thought it was just a Trump type of like, I don't know, slip or yeah, but no, but like, you know, I think I saw Wall Street Journal today saying that only a few people were on the know with this, you know, some sort of a plan that they're talking about. So I don't know how realistic it is, but he really is, you know, he really is consistent. I mean, the amount of times he's been talking about it is very big. So, you know, so and all these, you know, all these executive orders he's been signing supporting Israel, whether it with the ammunition and, you know, sanctions that were lifted off certain Israelis. So there's really, you know, Israelis are so positively surprised with what's going on so quickly. You know, that's something we don't expect so fast. And I think this administration is just very prepared and wants to make a difference.
We're talking with Zvika Klein. He's the editor-in-chief of the Jerusalem Post. So if you look right now at phase two of these of the ceasefire, it is get out of Gaza. You guys have the IDF has to get out of Gaza.
Right.
There's no way that's going to happen.
Right. So there are talks about doing some sort of like a continuation of phase one, meaning, you know, our troops stay where they are. There's still there are certain junctions where they're now allowed to go through. There are certain hours a day where most of the day where we can't have our aircraft, you know, go over Gaza. And every week we'll have 3 hostages being released. And I don't know, depending on the amount requested per, you know, per Israeli hostage, Palestinian terrorists being released from Israeli jails. That is something that theoretically can be, you know, done and probably easier to convince than going to that second phase. And the question is, will that, you know, would that actually allow us to receive all the hostages or not? But that can be like a middle ground.
So I was reading Jerusalem Post a couple of days ago, and one of the hostages, female, says, I was kept in an UNRWA office, a United Nations office. So that's why we have stopped funding UNRWA. Everyone's like, how could you get rid of this UN organization that does so good? Because they're doing so good for Hamas, and they have terror ties.
100%. I mean, UNRWA has been really a really terrible and you know – I mean, there were members of UNRWA who participated in October 7th, and let alone obviously holding people in homes of teachers of UNRWA and in institutions. The textbooks in the schools that UNRWA, that the UN funds, are so toxic against not only Israel, also the United States and anything that's, you know, Western society. So I think it's a really smart move and an important move. And, you know, it's very, you know, it'd be interesting to see how this evolves. In general, I think the Trump administration, when it comes to international organizations, that some of them should be, you know, either dismantled or function in a very different way. I think the leverage he's doing there is something that could cause a real positive change.
I want you to hear what Dr. Masheed Ansanouri said with us today, who's senior advisor to Qatar's prime minister. He's been in the meetings, in the talks, and expects him to engage within the next 2 days. Cut 29.
The discussions of the post-war situation in Gaza vary. We have had a lot of ideas come from everybody, including the United States, and we value the partnership with the United States over the mediation. As you know, the U.S., along with us in Egypt, are the mediators and are the monitors of the implementation of the agreement. And therefore, these statements, along with others, are part of a wider discussion over the post-war situation, which I think is not no one player around the world can do it alone. This has to be an international effort led by countries like the United States in order for us to have a sustainable peace in the region.
He went on to say that you need Trump's bluntness. There's something about the bluntness and directness that works in the Middle East. Can you explain that?
I think it's also the creativity in a sense. And, you know, we probably spoke about this in the past, but like, you know, the fact that we just like, you know, yeah, there's like, you know, Abraham Accords or, you know, Israel has relationship, you know, has relations with, you know, the UAE, Bahrain, Morocco. You know, this is something that was, I'm still surprised occasionally when I'm talking about it, because it was something that people couldn't even imagine. Even people who were traveling to UAE for business from Israel would never imagine the scope of a huge, you know, shift. And the fact that, by the way, you know, with everything going on in Israel and with Gaza and Hamas, et cetera, all these countries are still, you know, holding the peace and the normalization still exists, right? Are they like speaking out, in, you know, for Israel? No, but you know, and if you meet with them,
they,
you
held
know, the place,
yeah, the Abraham Accords held.
Also, they'll tell you, you know, they hate the Palestinians, you know, and they can't speak out against them because that's not something they can do as Muslims, but they understand it's a real problem. And this is all really something that happened in the Trump administration. And you know, sometimes, you know, not always, but sometimes when you have people who are diplomats who actually didn't grow up in the system, and I think the same thing in Israel, you know, they're able to think outside the box.
So the other thing is, it turns out, does Hamas have more troops than they thought left? Is that a surprise to most people in Israel? That they still had brand new uniforms, they had some weapons, they're showing up
right.
when the hostages
right.
are released and trying to show some strength. They're pretending that they got the aid and handing it to the people. Did that catch
right.
you guys by surprise?
Not really. I mean, in a sense, yes. You know, you see like the rubble in Gaza, and we know how many people we killed, and all these operations, and then you're like, wait, like they still exist. So it's not black and white. You know, a lot of these, most of these people are not necessarily trained as well. And I mean, I think also that's the tragedy of Gaza, when you have people who are, you know, homeless and have no job and the economy doesn't even exist. And there's a terrorist organization which is very well funded and will offer you to be part of their, you know, their organization for food and for, you know, you get uniforms and ammunition. So they'll do it. Are they as qualified as they were before? I don't think they were as much, but I think people were definitely surprised. You know, actually Blinken spoke about that, I think, in his last, one of his last press conferences, saying how, you know, how it's a real threat because there's tens of thousands of these militants or terrorists that you know, did not exist before. So they're recruiting a lot more people.
And here is President Trump, lastly, talking about Iran. And he's going all in again. Cut 34.
Today, I also took action to restore a maximum pressure policy on the Iranian regime. And we will once again enforce the most aggressive possible sanctions, drive Iranian oil exports to zero, and diminish the regime's capacity to fund terror throughout the region and throughout the world.
What does that mean? Because China's the one buying it. Are we going to sanction China?
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's a good question. You know, I think, you know, I mean, I have a question for you, actually. You know, I'm wondering how, you know, he also said in the press conference that he's willing to meet, you know, the leadership of Iran, and he wants to have like a whole big, you know, peace in the Middle East, like for all countries. That's something pretty, I don't know, wacky, or I don't know. I would definitely would not expect that. I don't know what exactly he would do in that type of situation, but it's kind of surprising.
Well, between everything he announced, I think he said in the past he talked to him, but in everything he announced, I think the Gaza part of saying yeah. we'll take it over was the bigger news. But that's an important point.
No, that was the bigger news. But also, like he's willing to meet, you know, with. I don't know. Listen, he was also, you know, willing to meet with Kim Jong-un, and, you know, in his first administration. So, I, you know, it didn't necessarily cause, you know, normalization with North Korea. But I don't know. That would be very interesting to see how that was.
How much longer, Zvika Klein, do you think they're going to have their missile defense down? I mean, there's only a window now to right. get rid of that program, and I think they all know it. So we're going to say pick up Jerusalem Post. The two-state delusion is dead, and that's the reality of it. You write about it. Hopefully, we'll look forward to talking to you when phase two kicks into gear, if it does. Thanks, Avika.
Yeah. We should speak about these positive things all the time. Thank
Absolutely.
You.
Yep. And finally, they have a true friend in the White House, Brian Kilmeade Show.
Learning something new every day on The Brian Kilmeade Show. Information you want. Truth you demand. This is The Brian Kilmeade Show.
The new era of trade wars. Trump says tariffs are coming on Canada and Mexico and even the European Union.
The EU? Canada? Do we have any friends? I mean, Mexico, I get. Trump's been hate-f***ing Mexico pretty much since the escalator. That's the truth. But Canada? We're picking a fight with our most reliable and pleasant friend, the Labradoodle of allies? But I guess that's Trump tough. You know what I mean? You gotta walk into the prison yard, walk right up to the one guy who really doesn't seem to be a problem at all, and just, yeah! Take that, best friend! Who has willingly signed up to fight in every ridiculous war we've ever gotten into. Let that be a lesson to the rest of the world. We are a terrible friend.
So that is John Stewart going to town on the trade deals and some of the conflict. Nothing wrong with that. So that's fun. I mean, that's what Johnny Carson would do. But then you got to go back and talk about and mock the Democrats, in my view. And then we're back to old times. Some good news. U.S. Army recruiting had their most productive December in 15 years. They were listing 346 soldiers daily into the Army. That is the biggest in 12 years. Some say it's the biggest in 15 years. So that is what we hear is the Hegseth effect. Trump makes it cool to be in the military. Hegseth gives you the pride in the military, and he lets you know, I'm going to be for the warfighter. That's why people join. Look, now you got to get into high schools. You don't indoctrinate. You give that as an option. You talk about everything serving in our military does, and it makes you a better candidate in the real world, and you can still get a college education at the same time. So that's some good news. Brian Kilmeade Show. Don't forget, BrianKilmeade.com. I'll see you on the 15th in Jacksonville, and then in St. Louis on March 22nd. History Liberty Laughs on stage. My chance to see you in person. All streamed on Fox Nation.
Fox News Audio presents the Fox Nation Investigates podcast, a look into the Menendez brothers with victims or villains. Then, Judge Jeanine Pirro and a panel of experts break down their new fight for freedom with monsters or misunderstood, and follow three incredible cases where world-renowned forensic pathologist Dr. Michael Botten helps change the course of the investigation with the Botten Files. Listen and follow at foxtruecrime.com or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. Listen to the show ad-free on Fox News Podcast Plus, on Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music with your Prime membership, or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.